Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we have Barbara Froman, and she's going to chat about her book, Shadows and Ghosts. Welcome, Barbara.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm really happy. I love your book. I'm totally enamored by it.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to hear that. It always tickles me when people like it.
Well, I'm a movie buff, and I love all your movie references. I think they're amazing.
Oh, thanks. Well,
that was really my favorite.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, that's good. I mean, I wanted to mix in films that would be familiar, you know, very iconic images, with some things that were a little bit less familiar, that were, you know, very much a part of my background and also just the movies that I love.
Yeah, we must have very similar tastes because every time I read, oh, I love that movie.
Which ones particularly?
Oh, well, my top favorite one was World of Henry Orient that you had. I mean, it's very obscure. A lot of people don't even know it, but it's one of my favorite movies when I was a kid and so important to your plot.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I mean, the two girls, the relationship between the two girls, who are not sisters but from very different kinds of backgrounds, different families, who find each other.
Mm-hmm.
And go off adventuring, and that's...
Jumping over fire hydrants.
Exactly. I mean, that, you know, that image still sticks with me from that film. Those two girls, I think that they call lifting as they're jumping over the fire hydrants. And it's just, there's so much joy that is expressed in that movement. And just also in the relationship between the two girls, that I really wanted that to be a driving force for the character who is having a very difficult relationship with her sister, has always had a difficult relationship with her sister, and that film early in their lives brings them together, at least for a little while.
Yeah, I know. It helped. I think it's a really... It's a fun movie. I mean, there was a lot of other references, but that's the one that strikes me, because I was always one of my favorites, and nobody ever knew what I was talking about, and that you put it there, I was like, oh, my God.
Well, you know, I've heard that from people before, too, that suddenly, you know, I'll be talking about it someplace, and somebody will say to me, I love that movie. You know, nobody seems to know about it.
I know. It's
and
like
it
one
was.
Of those secret movies, childhood or something.
Well, exactly. And and also, the thing that amazed me about it was that when I was in graduate school, I remember we were at some function or other, and one of the pianists teaching at the school was suddenly talking about that scene with Peter Sellers with the orchestra. You know, not being able to get at playing his cadenza and not being able to remember the right place to end up, you know, and how hilarious he thought that scene was. And I thought, you've seen that movie? Excuse me?
Yeah, you know, the orchestra, the conductor, the people in the audience, everybody falling asleep except the two girls.
Right. Exactly. And also just the way that it lampoons modern music at that time. You know, it's a little bit Stravinsky, a little bit Copland, a little bit Bernstein. I mean, it's just like got these touches of all different very well-known composers from that era, but with none of the real class of any of them.
I don't think they would even recognize their own music from the way she
said. I know. In fact,
it was Peter
Sellers.
I mean, the man was a genius.
Oh, he was. He was just fantastic. I loved him. And now, these days, I mean, I love it, you know, for the nostalgia of the relationship between the girls. And because I saw it when I was at an age that was close to those girls.
Mm-hmm.
But now, as an adult, I appreciate it for so many more things. And Peter Sellers' performance is one of them. And, of course, having a musical background, that I appreciate it even more. It's a very funny film.
Oh, it's a
Excuse
great
me?
Film. I was going to say, talking about your background, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and your background?
Okay. I'm a New Yorker, born and raised in New York and Queens, and I started singing and playing the piano probably at around the same age that I started writing. So I always loved books, loved everything about storytelling. I did wind up studying music formally and got degrees in music composition, but there was always a kind of balancing act for me between the two art forms. And eventually, with some encouragement from some of my professors in graduate school, they kept pushing books into my hands and saying, read this, read that. And some other professors telling me how much they loved the papers I was writing for them. Once I finished the degree, I decided to concentrate on writing prose rather than music. So that's I worked in advertising and public relations for a while, and then from there I started teaching. I wound up getting a teaching job and taught in universities for colleges and universities for about 15 years.
Oh, so when what sets you off? Is it a movie? Is it a book? I mean, and what is the thing that just lights your imagination? Since you come from a teaching background, is it like something that sparks you in, when you were in class? Or how did you start writing fiction?
You know, sometimes it's just an idea. It's with Shadows and Ghosts, it was very specific. I realized that as much as I loved films, there were single images from each film that were just stuck in my head. And when I remembered them, I recalled them, it was as if the image was just frozen there. And I thought this would be a really interesting way to set off a story, is to frame it within these images. And
that makes sense
to me. Yeah, and I thought that there were a lot of images that were left out of the book. I mean, I probably had about 30 or 35 images that I had pulled out, because when I saw them, I just kept seeing that one particular scene. And, you know, not necessarily with dialogue, it was just a frozen image. And so I thought, all right, you know, I would like to set off a story with these images, framed by these images, the way that scenes are framed. And, of course, naturally from there, it had to be about a filmmaker, somebody who was completely visually oriented. Of course, she has an art background.
Right.
But again, it's the idea, and she says that at the beginning of the book, it's the idea of framing things, that she frames everything. And so that just seemed natural, and that's what really triggered that book for me. The story I'm writing now is about musicians, the relationship between two musicians. But, you know, that's just because I wanted to write something with musical characters, go to that that part of my background. But that, you know, that is the thing that struck me about Shadows and Ghosts and really was the driving force behind it.
When you were writing that, I mean, I have a love of film, so I'm very curious. Did the film plot that was intersected in the book, was that something that was part of the glimpse of the structure of the scene that you had before you wrote it? Or did it pop into your head as you were writing the scene?
Film plot. Are you talking about the story within a story, the idea that she's making a film?
Yeah.
Okay. That came along with the story. I needed something. It's really, you know, I'm one of these people who saves things. So I knew that she was going to do a piece about homelessness. And because this book is so much about vision, about the way we see things and the way we perceive things, I needed to have a central story, which is the story within a story that's Spencer's.
Mm-hmm.
The homeless person whose story is told within the context of her stories as she's you know, as she's telling about how she wound up in the hospital. That actually was, I took that out of the desk drawer. That was really, that was a whole piece that I had discarded. And when I was writing this book and I thought, I need for somebody to tell a story that runs a parallel in some way to her story. And I thought, wait a second, I've got this piece that's all about the way people see things in my desk drawer.
That's interesting.
And so I thought, I'll just give it to one of the characters to tell.
So you
and
wrapped
let him
it around
tell it.
It. You
exactly.
wrapped around this character, and you, that way you can have the double vision.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
cool. I was
yes.
curious about that.
Yeah, no, that existed. I had written it probably about 5 to 10 years before I started writing the book. And the name of it was The Garden, which is, you know, when he starts talking about it, and he starts talking about the garden, and it's the idea of perception that, you know, you can have all the squalor around you, and yet if your vision is altered somewhat, it can look like paradise to you. And so, you know, that was a very important idea, especially because of dealing with the whole aspect and issue of homelessness.
Yeah.
So that, you know, I thought that that was important to have that as a central piece, but also because his breakdown in many ways coincides with Ida Mae's breakdown. And, you know, having those two stories run parallel was very important to me, and it worked out well. I was glad that I had saved it and not thrown it into the trash.
Yeah, that was good. Very good choice.
Well, I have to credit one of my teachers with that, who, when I had said to him that I had tossed something away, he wanted to know where the piece was that I was working on the week before, and I said, oh, I trashed it. He threw up his hands and said, no, you must never throw anything away.
Yeah, I have every note I've ever scribbled, and I'm one parent, it's very much alike, and the other parent, it's not. I have a question about all the mother and daughter references. Is that something that you're dealing with, or is that just something that you're fascinated by? Because, I mean, that was so really personal. Every mother-daughter reference hits you between the eyes. So I just was curious about that.
Thank you. Sadly, my mother passed away years ago. I remember... my relationship with her was probably like every mother-daughter relationship or most mother-daughter relationships. You know, it was great and it was difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I adored her. She was not always an easy person, but she was certainly a force in my life, and, you know, I loved her very much. I remember reading an article in a magazine, and I wish I could tell you which magazine it was, but the title of the article was, "You Love Her, You Hate Her, She's Your Mother." And, you know, and everything that the article said was just so true. It just discussed the difficulties in the relationship, you know, and how this is the case with most mother-daughter relationships. The idea of separating from one's mother is traumatic for both people, and causes great problems, can cause great problems. And, you know, there is this constant pulling between the two people. And I wanted to get that across. Of course, I used the Jewish mother for Ida Mae because she is Jewish, and that whole thing of having a Jewish mother is in my experience. I had, you know, a Jewish mother, Jewish grandmothers. I mean, you know.
Me too.
I
had a Jewish grandmother. I mean, I really related to some of it. Some of it I didn't, but because I have a really good relationship with my mother.
Right. But, you know, I think there is a way that they are in your lives, and the things that they say to you, you know, when Ida Mae her first encounter with her mother's ghost, you know, and the mother is saying, you know, You think because I'm dead, I don't know things. You know, I'm your mother. I know everything. I mean, that is such a Jewish mother line.
I loved it. That's like one of my favorite lines in your book.
Thank you. Thank you very much. But, you know, this is like in my ear, you know, of things that I had heard, that kind of speech, you know, darling, I'm dead, I'm not senile, you know, that kind of stuff. This is right out of my experience. And,
oh, my God.
And I wanted to...
I'm just remembering some of the stuff you wrote. You really did. You do get it. I mean, it's just so obvious.
Well, yeah. Thank you. I mean, I lived that. My mother was probably not as, I don't know.
What's
the phrase? Yeah, she was not as abrasive as Edna. Not as controlling in the same way. But she did have her moments, you know, and certainly I had grandmothers that, you know, talked a little bit like that, and friends' mothers who talked like that. But I also wanted to show, after having my husband is not Jewish, and his mother was very much like my mother. Mm-hmm. And the more I saw of her, I thought, man, you know, she's not Jewish, but she is a Jewish mother. You know, she doesn't have the dialect, she doesn't have the inflection. You know, the catchphrases are different, excuse me, but it's all the same stuff.
Well, I mean, and, if you think about it, mothers learn from their mothers, learn from their mothers,
yes.
learn from their mothers, and women are just like each other. So it doesn't really, it's not religious, it's just the way moms are.
Right, and you're exactly right. It's what they learn from their mothers. The way they were mothered is the way they are going to mother. And certainly,
try to do everything that they won't do that.
Yes. And suddenly you wake up and you're talking to your child and you go, oh my gosh, that was my mother's voice that just came out of my mouth. When did I turn into that?
Slap your own face,
I
mean. Bad.
Right. Exactly. So, you know. But I did want to show that the parallel in the mothering, so that the relationship problems that Ida is having with her mother are in many ways the same problems that Fern is having with her mother.
Yes, I did see the parallel. It's really clear.
Right.
I mean, you can see it.
Right, exactly.
I mean, it's almost different people, but almost the same voice.
Yes, yeah, very much so. And I mean, this is, you know, there is a very strong twin theme that goes throughout the whole book, because Ida Mae is herself a twin. Mm-hmm. She's also got a kind of sister twin in Fern. The mothers are kind of reflections of each other.
Mm-hmm.
So this just goes throughout the whole book. Where you see this, that you've got a character, and then they have a counterpart somewhere in the book.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was really, 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 it's a really well-written, fun, interesting, sad, scary, you have a very complex book.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm very happy about that. People have said to me that it's a fast read, and that I'm very happy about too, because I think sometimes people confuse complexity, that it has to be, if a book is complex, it has to be difficult to read. And I didn't want that for this. I wanted it to have that sense of flow that would make it easy to read, but for people to realize after they had read it or while they were reading it, well, there's more here than what seems to be, you know?
Oh, it's very layered. I mean, you can tell. You can see the layers. I mean,
yeah.
It's part of why it's interesting. It's the complexity of it.
Oh, thank you.
You know
Thanks.
What I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm glad when that comes across. I really am.
I wanted to know, you're a busy lady. How do you make time to write? You know, because I know you're writing your new book and you wrote your other book and you have other stuff. How do you make deals with your family? I'll cook you your favorite
Gosh.
Dinner.
Well, you know, there are nights where we eat out, we order in. It's one of those, okay, let's go to pizza.
Ice cream?
Yeah, seriously. Seriously, you know, okay, I think it's going to be a smoothie night. My husband is a composer, so I never have to make deals with him because he completely understands the need to work. And when we moved from our other house, we were fortunate enough to get a house where we would both have offices so that, you know, when we go into our offices to work, I mean, that's work time. And both of us understand that we don't bother each other. As for friends, it seems like most of the friends that I have around here are also writers. They're very busy. And so we're very respectful of each other's need to work as well. And sadly, my family and I have an awful lot of friends who live far away. They live on opposite coasts. I'm here in the middle of the country. And when they call, of course, they don't know what my schedule is or when I'm writing, but if they should call, I drop everything to talk with them.
Well, that
so,
I mean, if you don't see them very often.
Exactly, exactly, and I miss them all. Right, you know, precisely. So that's it. That always comes before work. But yeah, I don't have any particular schedule. I always say that, okay, I'm going to get up at, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning and write, and I don't. 6 o'clock
no.
rolls around, I look at the alarm and I shut it off. Go back to sleep.
This is like I say to myself, I'm going to meditate every morning. And I go, okay, I don't.
Right,
right. I
don't
have much
yeah.
to do. I have my mind already going with all the stuff I have to do. I don't meditate, you know. I do
well,
try to meditate, but I don't meditate when I want to do it.
Yeah, yeah. I was doing yoga for a while every morning, and I really liked that. I was doing about 15 minutes of yoga every single morning. And it was really nice, and I stopped doing it, and I keep saying, okay, this is the morning when I'm going to start doing it again. And it's always the morning that I'm not.
Yeah.
You
I
know,
mean,
where I just sit there, I want to linger over my espresso a little longer, you know.
Yeah.
Have another piece of chocolate.
It's hard to keep an exact schedule, you know. I admire people who do that. I write, except for today, you know, I don't do it on Tuesdays, but every day I write. But I don't write at a specific, I do usually write in the morning, but I don't write at a specific time because I don't know, I schedule, but I'm not that, it's like, okay, sometime in the morning I'm going to write, sometime I'm going to do this, sometime I'm going to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of, you know, you get done what you need to get done in a day. And I think that, you know, you get to a point where, and I do know some people who are incredibly disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not like that. I mean, I feel like I have a list usually each day of things that I need to get done in that day. If I get through my list, it's a really good day.
Yeah, I know. That's the way I feel too.
Yeah.
What do you feel about the different styles of publishing? Do you like that, or how do you feel about it?
Are we talking about electronic versus print, or traditional versus
self-publishing, traditional publishing, electronic? Well, I happen to love a book. I mean, I like the smell and hold of a book.
Mm-hmm.
I know there are people who love the e-book because they can carry it everywhere, but I like a book.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I have a Kindle, and I love it. I have to say that I'm a Kindle fan. I'm a reader fan. I like it because I don't have to carry a lot of books when I'm traveling.
Mm-hmm.
And I can just load them onto my Kindle, and I've got a really nice, compact way of reading them. I finish one book, I can just get started with another. Having said that, as much as I love it, when I'm at home, it's always print. It's, you know, it's a paperback or it's a hardcover. I don't like reading on the Kindle when I'm at home.
Yeah.
I much prefer to have a book in my hands. There is something, you know, as you say, about holding the book, turning the pages, I find that it enables me to enter the writer's world much more easily.
Yeah.
when I'm holding the book. It's just that physical act of doing it it's more engaging to me, you know.
And I'm on the computer so much. I like having a printed page in front of me because I'm all, you know, you see floating words all the time, you know, and it's just, it's okay, and that's the way the modern world is. But I just like having it. I like to also have a used book so I can have that history in my hand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I mean, you can see who the old owner is because they usually have a nameplate or they scribbled their information on the front. I don't know. I think it's sad that we're losing that.
I agree. And, I mean, I think anybody who really, you know, if from my generation, any of us who grew up loving books, I mean, it was the, you know, seeing them stacked up, it was that they all looked different. They, you know, there were the colors, the just everything about them. And as you say, the smell, I mean, there's
the
just
covers, the different styles.
Right, you know, I thought
paper.
Exactly. I mean, I love that book, the Shadow of the Wind. The whole concept of that, of having a place called the Cemetery of Forgotten Books.
Yeah.
Where, you know, somebody could go in and they pick out a book and that book belongs to them. I mean, this is such a romantic notion that in a way it's for everybody who really loves books. You hold the book and you feel connected to it in a way that you don't when you're holding onto a reader, at least not for me. And it sounds like not for you either. I don't feel connected. It feels like, you know, like something on the ether. I mean, I don't feel like it has substance.
Exactly. And also, you know, when you're on your cell phone, you're always like blah, blah, blah. You're always looking on your iPhone and stuff. And
right.
I just think you need to, like, put yourself back into humanity. And
mm-hmm.
I think a book is really human. We're losing that touch of humanity. I guess that's what I mean.
Yes, definitely. I think that the connection is very strong. I think that's absolutely true. Now, having said that, too, I mean, you know, my book is available for Kindle. So
I know, mine too.
Have to get that in there. And I like that availability. I really do. The convenience is fantastic.
Yeah,
and
I
don't, you know, and I do love to have it. And I do use it when I travel. You know, I would not want to be without it when I travel.
Yeah, I mean, you still have that book.
Right.
You know,
just because I love to read.
Yeah.
You know, and then also, it's the great thing of saying, okay, well, I finished everything, and you're connected so that you can just go in and pick out another book.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And in, half a minute, it's there.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really terrific. You know, I love technology.
I love technology, too. I'm so split in the middle. I just kind of weird.
I know.
We don't have a lot of time left.
Okay.
And I wanted to know if you have any events or anything coming up that you want people to know about.
Not currently, no. I'm spending the rest of my time on blogging, so people can always find me on my blog. It's Beyond Willow Bend. And I'm working on two projects simultaneously, so that's really where I'm spending my time these days.
One is your book on music, and what's the other project?
The other is a series of linked short stories that take place in a suburban town and cul-de-sac of all of these very strange characters that live in a cul-de-sac. And it has, all of the stories have kind of gothic overtones to them.
Cool.
So, in fact, the working title is Suburban Gothic.
Well, that sounds like a really cool title.
Yeah, thank you.
I like that.
In one of my moments of whimsy, I was thinking, gee, it would be kind of fun to write a book called Borscht Belt Gothic.
I understand that.
But it would have to be a comedy, of course.
Well, a lot of the audience probably, that's a Jewish reference, everybody.
Yes, it, yeah, you know, for, I mean.
That's why I'm laughing so hard.
Yeah, you know, we used to go to the Borscht Belt. For anybody who's seen Dirty Dancing,
yeah,
you know, that's kind of indicative of the hotels up in the Borscht Belt, you know, in the 1950s and 60s.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Sadly, I've really enjoyed it, but our interview's done. I just want to let everybody know next week I'm going to be talking to Terry Morgan about her book, Playing the Genetic Lottery. I'd like my live audience to thank Barbara. Thank you, Barbara. I've really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you so much, Sherry. So have I. It's been fun.
And thank you for chatting with Sherry.